right, let's do this.
It's Thursday, July 20th, 2017. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. I'm Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our capital muckraker-in-chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. This week, I am recording from within sounds of the ocean at the Jersey Shore, folks. Yes, down here for the week with the family. It's been pretty great. Glad that we're able to kind of hook up and bring you this episode this week. Once again, a little bit of a warning. You might get a little wonky with the audio here. We seem to have a pretty good connection, but just wanted to give you a heads up there and beg your patience ahead of time. So this week's news, John McCain has been diagnosed with brain cancer, according to the Mayo Clinic in Phoenix, Arizona. Prognosis is not good. McCain's announcement drew some of the attention away from Mitch McConnell's colossal failure to repeal and replace Obamacare. The CBO scores McConnell's last-ditch attempt to repeal the ACA without replacing it. 30 would be thrown off health insurance, a full 10 million more than under the GOP's repeal and replace plan. Trump orders Senate Republicans to come up with a repeal and replace plan. Late night meetings yield diddly. Sean Kitchen heads to D.C. for Schoolhouse Rock. Actually, for the healthcare protest. Over 155 people were arrested yesterday. Pennsylvania activists were there as well and converged on Senator Toomey's D.C. office. There is no place you can hide, senators. And Sean gets a close-up of a real-life Rand Paul staffer, and he's exactly what you'd expect. Less than a week after a consultant's report on the future of PA's State System of Higher Education, or PASHI, was released, Chancellor Frank Brogan announces he's calling it quits. Brogan was hired almost 4 years ago through an unprecedented secret search process in which search committee members were forced to sign confidentiality agreements by former Board of Governors Chair Guido Piccini. Brogan's hiring was the third straight chancellor from Florida, who rose the political ladder as Jeb Bush's right-hand man in education, despite a lack of academic credentials. I guess secret processes don't lead to the best qualified candidates, do they, Guido? Jess King launches her challenge to Smucker to a pretty impressive crowd. And Daryl Metcalf breaks down and cries once again after being called a racist. In space news, Elon Musk warns that the government needs to regulate the development of AI before robots start killing people in the street. Google Street View now lets you explore the International Space Station. NASA releases hundreds of videos to YouTube. And Pennsylvania's climate to be like Texas by 2100. That's always comforting. And let's not forget, it's Shark Week in Harrisburg. Well, I'll remind everybody, why don't you tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern. I will not be there this week. I'm on vacation, and it was going to be a little crazy on Wednesday to get the report up. But you can stream the show live at freespeech.org, or you can tune in on Dish Network, DirecTV, or with the Free Speech TV app on Roku. Again, that's on Free Speech TV every Saturday at 7 p.m. And if you missed the show, don't worry about it. Go right to the ricksmithshow.com and you click on the Free Speech TV icon in the sidebar. As a reminder, everybody, we cannot do what we do without you. We need you to keep this progressive media going strong. Become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to ragingchickenpress.org and look for the support and membership tab. Click Become a Member and you're on your way. Not ready to become a member? No problem. You can make a one-time donation by clicking donate. We need you, the progressive community, to help us deepen pull-no-punches progressive media that will hold power accountable. And as a reminder, time is running out, folks, but we have a special membership offer now through the end of July. If you become a member at the $15 a month level, we'll send you a copy of Naomi Klein's latest book, No Is Not Enough, Resisting Trump's Shock Politics and Winning the World We Need. Woo-hoo. And I tell you, we do need it now more than ever. So, Sean, man, how's Pennsylvania treating you?
It's hot.
I hear it's been in the 90s all week.
Oh, yeah. It was really hot yesterday down in D.C. I decided to wear a button-down shirt to look my best while in D.C.
Always.
And it was like 97 degrees when we got out of the Russell Senate office building at 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, man. Well, why don't we kind of go right into it? I mean, yesterday, as you did your exodus from PA for the day to get down to D.C. for those protests, you posted multiple videos online on our Facebook page, and I encourage everybody to get out there and check out the videos. It seemed like, man, it was a pretty raucous event, I have to say.
Yeah, it was. Over 500 people met at St. Mark's Episcopal Church right behind the Capitol. I'm sure you're familiar with that church.
I am indeed.
We met there like 10:30 in the morning. There was some civil disobedience training going on afterwards after people got settled in. Around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, there was a town hall that went on, just a bunch of people who stood up, took the mic from the table and spilled their thoughts out about some of these issues. And at 2 o'clock, all 500 people went over to the Russell Senate office building, and 155 of those 500 people were arrested. Were arrested in the hallways of the Senate office building outside of the legislators' offices. People were going inside the offices, doing the mic check. You know, Occupy still lives on to this day with that type of language, using the mic check as a way to propel your voice. And people were out sharing their stories. The event was put on by Center for Popular Democracy, ACT UP, and National Nurses United was there in a strong way.
Man, I have to say, it was pretty impressive. And I'm just out of curiosity. I mean, this week, before the news about John McCain being diagnosed with brain cancer broke, I mean, really the entire week was dominated by Mitch McConnell's, last-ditch attempts to try to push through this kind of healthcare reform. I'm just curious, how did that play itself out, like, among the activists? I mean, there were some folks, I saw some things on Twitter and things like that, to say, well, because they're protesting, but the healthcare is dead, so why are they there? I'm just curious, what was that like? How were people receiving that, about why they were there on the ground?
According to the people there, the healthcare bill was not dead. They treated this thing as if the bill was still alive. They wanted to make sure the bill was dead. They didn't care that people said the vote was going to be delayed. They believed the vote was still going to happen. And, by all accounts, it sounds like that Mitch McConnell's trying to craft a vote for next week, going into the August recess. They were taking it very seriously that this thing is still alive, and that you should not consider this dead if the media proclaims it to be dead.
I'm really glad to hear that, because that was that's what came through, at least, like, on all the videos that you took. I mean, hearing the stories, and I thought this was really powerful. I mean, you basically, as you said, kind of showing up at senators' offices, using the kind of the mic check tactic and telling stories about how the ACA has basically saved people's lives. The one that stuck out in my head in particular today, for some reason, as I was watching it again this morning, was this woman who said she was, a grandmother and has been living with HIV for about 23 years. And then another story about how the ACA basically saved her husband and basically kept him alive. And it's one thing to hear that story, but to hear that story told through that kind of mic check and echoing through the, nation's capital, the halls of the Capitol, that was pretty powerful. And it's the kind of thing that kind of brings all the attention right on those senators who are insisting, like Senator Pat Toomey in Pennsylvania, right, who are insisting on gutting health care. And we should say, like I said in the opening notes, if you're talking about McConnell's latest push, right, and doesn't seem like he wants to let up on it, is going to actually cost more people their health insurance than even the horrible previous bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to get the numbers, to realize how much that this action has grown over the past 3 weeks, 3 weeks ago, 40 people showed up to get arrested, right? Mm-hmm. The following week, 80 people showed up to get arrested. And then yesterday, 155 showed up to get arrested. Now, there was also support people there. There was 500 people who showed up yesterday total, but those numbers are growing each week with people getting arrested inside the Senate hallways. And it was pretty interesting talking to the Capitol Police about this. You know, when they were making the arrest, they forced they formed a barricade and they pushed everyone down the halls to give them a buffer zone to make the arrests, right? And the arrests were peaceful. There was no maybe a couple people resisted and where they were forcing the Capitol Police to drag them out of the building. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it seemed like the Capitol Police were pretty sympathetic about this this action because, you know, it's also going to affect them. I mean, they're working Capitol Police in D.C. I'm sure their salaries are higher than everyone else's, but the cost of living in D.C. is much higher. And this is probably an issue that affects them and their families. You know, also took the time to, you know, crack a couple jokes like, just another day in the Capitol. And they're just like, well, as of late, yes, it is. Like, this is becoming like a new... Like, this is becoming like a daily occurrence for them. You know, you talk to some of the media people and it's also becoming a daily occurrence for them. And, you know, it's fun going inside the Beltway, you know, because this is the type of thing that never happens inside the Beltway, like these type of civil disobedience actions.
Well, I would put it like this, actually, you know, after, you know, I lived in D.C. for 3 years and these kind of actions happen quite a bit, actually. Right. But I should say civil disobedience actions happen quite a bit. What distinguishes what we're seeing right now in so many ways?
I was going to say, this isn't Bill McKibben strapping his arm to the White House fence.
Right. Exactly. Right. This is what you have this is citizen action of actually people making the trip to come in here and do this civil disobedience. And we have to say is that it's not just like the kind of like activists in the D.C. area that are showing up to put on these things. Right. Or a part of some national mobilization or something like that. This is part of an ongoing strategy that those people and I'm sure this is what you've said, at least, you know, too, as well, the people that went down to Pennsylvania, it's not like they were newbies to this, right? They've been involved on the ground in Pennsylvania, in the states, building a movement to kind of preserve healthcare for Americans. I mean, this is kind of like, you know, this is what, in my mind, separates this out.
Yeah.
Really, and grassroots national movement going on.
And the people who showed up for this, the people who showed up for this yesterday, you know, were people who had HIV or living with AIDS. They're people who were addicts. You know, a lot of former addicts and recovering alcoholics were there. Mm-hmm. People who have pre-existing conditions showed up. You know, leaving, I had the opportunity to interview a group of people. I didn't post a video yet, but a group of Philadelphians from Project Home, you know, who were all living on the streets. They were all living on the streets this time last year, this time 2 years ago. And the Affordable Care Act is the reason why they're not on the streets anymore. You know, it took them, you know, they're living on assistance with Medicaid and Medicare, but you know, them being able to get the drug treatment they need, the alcohol treatment they need, get themselves off the streets and get themselves having jobs and stuff like this. You know, these are the people that are going to be affected. I was talking to one of them, you know, the one guy was telling me he went from 110 pounds this time last year to 230 pounds this time this year, just because he got the treatment that he needed.
Wow.
And not like 230 pounds being obese. No, 230 pounds of like, you know, putting actual healthy weight on and looking like a normal human being and not looking like a bag of bones.
Right.
You know, these are the stories that, you know, I encountered yesterday when I was down there. And, you know, we kind of had a conversation, you know, if this bill ultimately fails, it's pretty freaking cool having all this type of like stuff, like historical capital on your hard drive or on your computer. Like, hey, I was actually down here for this. I was up in the faces of people and recording this. And, you know, this is something that you can like take on for years.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't know. I've always been someone who's who believes that, you know, or not believes, but, being there actually, I think means something, you know, and as a perspective, and I remember having this conversation with some friends of mine, my friend Seth down in Westchester and stuff at one point, like when ABSCUF, like our faculty union, was taking its first strike vote. This is not when we just went on strike, but this is even before. And we had a special meeting out in Penn State. I took my son with me. Right. And to be there for the vote. And it was really, you show up, you drive across the state, right? Drive across the state, sit down, convene. You have one order of business as a call for this vote. You vote, and then you're done. Then you leave, you go home, right? It was that kind of stuff. But that stuff being there actually, I think matters. And just like, you know, even, I mean, obviously I wasn't there, but even through your eyes of what you were able to kind of bring there with the video footage and that kind of stuff, the kind of stories that you're able to capture, becomes absolutely critical for the historical record. I mean, you know, some of this stuff will make it to like the evening news, and some of this will make it to the cable news. But the kind of, you know, discussions that you're just describing, I mean, that stuff is absolutely critical to have as part of that long-term perspective.
Yeah. And I guess one of the things coming out yesterday's was the Medicare for All fight. That was one of the main messages that were coming. Not publicly, right? Not like these were people sharing their stories inside the office buildings, right? But inside the town hall with everyone there, one of the main messages was universal healthcare now. Mm-hmm. At one point, like National Nurses United had a bunch of people there in their shirts. At one point, Jean Ross stood up and grabbed the microphone, and she's the co-president, one of the co-presidents of National Nurses United. And she was talking about like universal healthcare. Now's the time for Medicare for all. You know, we've heard that message a lot yesterday. And, you know, this is one of the things I think that like having a gathering like this of 500 people or hundreds of people week after week after week to kill this bill in publicly. But, you know, this message also is going to go back home.
Well, you know, and this is one of the things that, you know, we've been talking about now for weeks now. You know, I think more pointedly over the last couple of weeks, that, you know, this is one of these, and I think the way I was talking about it last week was like, this is one of these leapfrog moments, right? Where we got to say, okay, enough of this, you know, kind of messing around with the edges of things. Like now it's the time to leapfrog. They're the Republicans, the GOP, the right wing is trying to kind of completely destroy healthcare. And where we need to be now is not just save the ACA, but, you know, look, this is too complicated. This is too messy. This is not what we want as Americans. We need to go to the single payer system, universal healthcare for all, Medicare for all, however you want to put it. Same thing with, you know, again, I think the other biggies to be on there about free higher education, right? And, you know, I think that discussion about universal basic income, right, from a left perspective has got to be on that agenda too as well. And the more I think about it, the more I, you know, see, you know, especially when you're telling me that you're on the ground there and that becomes one of the main topics of discussions. This is what, you know, I'm keeping my fingers crossed that when we start moving forward, when the Democrats are having to kind of start to thinking about presidential campaigns and midterm elections and things like this, that these are the kinds of issues that are going to make it front and center into, you know, to their, you know, to their campaign, because this should be, I mean, it's already on. A bunch of this stuff is there in the platform in some ways, thanks to Bernie Sanders' campaign and his people. But this is, I think you're right. I mean, this is the direction that we need to go now.
Yeah, definitely.
So let me ask you this. So, I mean, you said too, as well, that there were about what, it was 18 people from Pennsylvania went down?
No.
Oh no, I'm sorry.
There were like two or three busloads of people from Pennsylvania that went there.
Oh, my bad. Oh, there were 18. I'm sorry. I don't know where busloads.
There were 18 people from Pennsylvania who got arrested outside Senator Pat Toomey's office. And there were also people from Pennsylvania who got arrested outside of other offices down there to show solidarity with people from other states that were a little bit underrepresented. And, yeah. So, I mean, like 18 people got arrested outside of Senator Pat Toomey's office.
That's pretty awesome. Was he there, or was it just his staffers there?
His staffers were there. I think they were in session yesterday.
Like, I mean, I think that is absolutely fantastic. So now you got me thinking about something else. So it's 18. I'm sorry, I misunderstood that. But that you had 18 Pennsylvanians arrested. I had 2-3 busloads that went down. So that's that is a pretty sizable makeup of who was actually there in the protest were from Pennsylvania.
What's that? I'm sorry, you were breaking up a little bit.
It's a pretty sizable number of people that were there for the protest were actually from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it seemed like Pennsylvania definitely had the most people in the House.
Man, I'll tell you that there goes that's kudos to the Tuesday with Toomey's people. Kudos to the folks that have been organizing on the ground here for a while. That's impressive.
Also, ran into some people from Democracy Spring and some people who were participating in the March on Harrisburg. So that was always fun seeing those people around. You know, you get to
Well, absolutely. And, you know, and they've just released that video that we had posted up soon that we're looking at round two of the March on Harrisburg from these folks. From that's what my understanding is.
Yeah. And, you know, it's time to make Harrisburg the poster child.
Yeah, hey, man, I'm all for that. I'm all for that. That's for sure. Hey, so one of the things that one of the things that you sent me for here as kind of as part of your tour of the Capitol there was this awesome picture of one of Rand Paul's staffers, right? And I just got to get this in before we go for a break, because it's just like and he's kind of like at a door, and there's somebody trying to get into the door, and he's standing at the door kind of like the door's part the way open, and he's exactly what you'd expect from a Rand Paul staffer, right?
Yeah. So Rand Paul's office, right, to start this off, there was the only office door that was closed, right? Mm-hmm. And it had like an 8x10 white piece of paper. If you want to meet with the senator or the senator's staff, you must call this number to be let in.
Yeah, because, you know, libertarians believe in free and open access and freedom, right?
So this guy knocks on the door, who's a staffer from Rand Paul's office, right? He was this kid was from Louisville, Kentucky, which I think is where Rand Paul's from, right? Kentucky?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
One of the southern states, but from Louisville, Kentucky. Kentucky. He was a University of Louisville alumni, and he has HIV. And he was in Mitch McConnell's office explaining how he had to leave the state, right, for this. And then right afterwards, that group of people who didn't get arrested went to Senator Rand Paul's office to go for the remaining of that group to get arrested. And this douchebag.
Hey, you know, soft coat it, Sean.
Pretty much this douchebag with his hair brushed over to the side opens up the door and has like this curt conversation. And as he starts like trying to do the mic check, boom, door just slams shut in his face. But like the photo of this guy who like opened up the door, I guess he looks like exactly what a Rand Paul staffer would look like. Just some asshole, right? some stoned asshole, like libertarian.
Well, that's what I was gonna say.
College. It looks like he ripped a bong. He was ripping a bong, like exactly. Right before he opened up the door. Like that, just
that's
like
why, that's why you had the door. That's why you had the door shut, Sean.
like he just looked like he ripped a bong before he opened up the door. And I put the photo up online, and a couple of people were like, "Wow, that's exactly how I would like." This is exactly how I think a Rand Paul staffer would look like.
Oh, God. He's like, man, leave me alone. I got to get back to my hydroponics and like making photocopies of the fake ophthalmology school degrees that Rand Paul runs. You know, he's like, that's crazy, man. So I mean, that's a great pick, I have to say, too, as well. So, all right. So, we're coming up to a break. And when we come back, we're going to kind of get into some news here in Pennsylvania, everything from major retirement in Pennsylvania system of state system of higher education. Anytime there's Daryl Metcalf in the news, makes me a happy guy. So just as a reminder, as we go to break, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. If you can, right, become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month, you can go to ragingchickenpress.org and click on the support and membership tab and say, click become a member. $5 a month. That's an easy, easy get. It's like a beer or a coffee a month or something like this. And as a reminder, too, as well, now through the end of July, if you become a member at the $15 a month level, we'll send you a copy of Naomi Klein's book, No Is Not Enough. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be back right after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1971. It was an historic day for the men and women who deliver the U.S. mail. It was the day that the American Postal Workers Union and the National Association of Letter Carriers signed their first ever union contract. Although there had been earlier postal unions, they did not have formal bargaining rights. Postal wages were set by Congress. This meant that the starting wage for postal workers was only $6,200 in 1970. Many of these workers actually qualified for food stamps. Frustrated at their low pay and working conditions, postal workers in New York City walked off the job. Soon, 200,000 of their fellow workers across 30 major cities joined them on the picket lines. A story in Time magazine described the impact of the work action, writing, quote, "The first national postal stoppage in U.S. history and the largest walkout ever against the federal government, the postal strike almost immediately began to strangle the operation of commerce, impair government functions, and vastly inconvenience the public." To end the strike, Congress awarded the workers a 6% raise. But even more importantly, Congress decided to reorganize the Postal Service. The Post Office Department changed its name to the United States Postal Service. With this reorganization, postal workers won for the first time the right to bargain for better wages, hours, and working conditions. Their first contract raised the starting wage to $8,488 a year, a more than 30% increase to the pay level before the strike. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coup podcast. So we had a major announcement this week coming from Chancellor Brogan of PASHE. That's the Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education. If you recall, last week on the podcast, we talked about this new report that had got released from this consultant company called NENCHEMS, which is like the National Council for Higher Education Management or something like this, Nanogent Systems or whatever it might be. And I think it's fair to say that there were a lot of, say, faculty and staff members and people who really just cared about public higher education in general who were very nervous about this report, in part because it had been commissioned by Frank Brogan, the chancellor of PASHE. There were some expectations that what was going to happen is that there was going to be recommendations to close down some of the universities, to force some mergers, or to actually, you know, gut the collective bargaining agreement. And at least I would say from my perspective, it was pretty remarkable because, when it came right down to it, one of the first things that came out when the recommendations was basically say, here's what not to do. And it was the system and the office of the chancellor should not be eliminated. No university should be closed. No university should be merged. No university should be separated from the system. And there should be no attempt to undermine the collective bargaining process. Right. And that was, I think, a shock to a lot of us. There was also several comments that were made by the guy from NEMCHEMS who was presenting this at the Board of Governors last week. And he basically said that there was PASHE's and Pennsylvania's kind of management was incapable of really moving forward on this. There was a failure of leadership. And that was kind of very interesting. And then to like a week later, to hear that Brogan has basically announced his retirement was pretty interesting, to say the least. That makes me think that basically what happened is that Brogan knew full well what was going to be in that report. It was supposed to be the first time that anybody in that room heard about it. According to reports, it was like in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, they were saying that Brogan said that, or he was reported, Cynthia Shapira, the chair of the Board of Governors, said that Brogan announced his retirement before that report came forward, which makes it seem to me that, yeah, they knew it was going to be in that report, and that implicated Brogan in many ways. So, that's crazy. I mean, you know, Sean, you were there for part of that hearing, and I started hearing from some people who were at the hearing at the Board of Governors meeting that day that Brogan was a little bit out of sorts. And I don't know if you got to see any of that or not.
I guess so. I mean, I wasn't really paying attention to him. I was just like looking at the graphs, but he was pretty quiet the whole time. Mm-hmm. Wasn't really talkative.
Well, what I found out, there was one of the union leaders of local campuses, Amanda Morris from Kutztown. She was there, and she was basically putting a call for, basically pleading to the Board of Governors. This is before the report was read, pleading to the Board of Governors that they include faculty in a partnership. That instead of this being this antagonist thing that, you know, look, we can solve these problems, these academic problems that we're facing with PASHE, but, you know, faculty need to be there as partners, as full partners. And apparently Brogan got really snippy, right, back in response to Amanda. And it was ironic then that what we find in the report was exactly that charge, that basically faculty members, the people with the academic credentials to actually set academic policy in a consistent way, in a meaningful way across the state system, faculty were being excluded from those kind of policy decisions. Right. And so I was like, I said, now I have a little bit of an idea about why Brogan might have been a little bit snippy. Right. And we should remind everybody too, as well. I was like, here's a guy that he's the third straight chancellor from Florida to come to Pennsylvania. We could probably say the third straight failed chancellor, who had basically been brought in from a austerity minded kind of anti-union context to come to PASHE and, you know, essentially to kind of break up the system is what we've all seen as faculty members. And here you go. Brogan was the last one, and he seemed to be very much the hitman. And guess what? It just failed. You know, he came in with no academic credentials. He came in with, no higher degrees. He didn't really ever teach except for something like eighth grade. And he made his mark in education as Jeb Bush's right-hand man down there in Florida, instituting basically voucher systems, right, and privatization of public education down in Florida, and then made it right up to Secretary of Education in the state and so on, in part for being nothing but a kind of a go-to right-wing GOP operative. And I think that when Brogan first came up here, or actually we should say when we first found out that Brogan was coming up here, that set off some alarm bells because the former Board of Governors Chair Guido Picchini, he basically insisted upon this completely private and confidential process for hiring the chancellor. And so nobody had any input, right, except for the people who had to sign confidentiality agreements to be part of that hiring process. And then they end up hiring this guy who's this kind of right-wing operative. And if you remember back then, Sean, when Brogan was first hired, part of my research was like, you know, what do we know about this guy? And so I was calling down to Florida, talking to union leaders down there at Florida Atlantic, where Brogan had been president before, talking to people on the ground to find out what his background, his history was, and find out that this guy is, you know, he doesn't really care about academics. He doesn't really care about faculty members. He doesn't really care about higher education other than gutting it as a right-wing operative. And, you know, I think that, you know, our reporting there, I think, was important because it basically says, look, this is what this guy came to do. And we saw that play out over the next several years.
Yeah, no. And it's pretty interesting seeing some of the things that happened while he was here, especially with Westchester trying to break apart from the state system. seeing what, he was the first chancellor to ever force a strike in the union's history here with the PASHE. And like, what did he really accomplish? I was looking at like the list of accomplishments and like, okay, this is like, you know, this could be like something that anyone could accomplish, right? Like in this position, like just trying to find up his best resume. And one of the things he got funding 3 years in a row after there was like 4 years without funding. And it's like, yeah, but the state system is still funded pre-stimulus 2011 levels.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, we're still like, we're not even talking about like the stimulus dollars. We're still like that the state system was funded at. We're still funded. The state system is still funded below the 2011 pre-stimulus dollar mark, which is pretty astonishing. Like, is that really an accomplishment? Be 6-7 years out from that, and you're still underfunded from where you were 8 years ago.
Right, exactly. And that comes at, you know, that's also where, you know, he's kept Pennsylvania at, you know, 46th from the bottom in funding of public higher education in the nation. Right. I mean, you know, that's nothing to write home about, certainly. And I remember that part of what we saw, especially in contract negotiations well before the strike, not only that did Brogan really not convince legislators. And this guy was a high-level Republican operative too as well. So you think he basically have some sway if he wanted to. But he went before the Board of Governors. He went before the Senate and House committees, the budget hearings, and basically joined in this kind of like scripted exchange to go after faculty members in the union, right? He went after them basically, was perfectly willing to lay all the blame at the faculty's feet, all for more, even almost other budget cuts. It was pretty crazy. And it arguably that was his performance before the budget hearings last year, was what, that was what led, faculty members to finally tip their hand and say, that's it, we're done with this guy, because, he is clearly not a friend. Not only has he not accomplished anything other than add new layers of management, right? Add more obscurity, more difficulty in even talking. The guy would come to a campus, right, to give his little spiel. He would talk about, he'd say, we have 45 minutes. He would talk 40 minutes about himself. He'd start off like, hi, everybody. I'm Frank Brogan, and I think it's important that I tell everybody about myself. Let me tell you about Florida. Florida's a wonderful sunshine state. And then he would go into this long thing. And then he'd be like, oh, look at the time. I have time for one question. And then he was out of there. When that happened at Kutztown University, we were like, what is going on here? And then we found out that it was the exact same performance that he was giving across the state. So he would grandstand and try to get good, decent press for himself across the state system. But he had no interest in actually doing what needed to be done. So, I could say this, he's supposed to be gone. He said he announced his retirement effectively September 1st. And good riddance to Frank Brogan. I am only hoping that this is going to be a wake-up call to the Board of Governors. That, look, if you're going to, now we're going to have to search for a new chancellor. And I think you got to throw out this kind of behind the scenes maneuvering that has happened in the past. Get rid of this confidential secret process for search for the chancellor. And let's actually work like as faculty, students and management together to get somebody who's actually qualified to set academic policy and lead a state system like Pennsylvania's. I mean, we're talking about a system that, over 100,000 students across the state. And yes, there's financial problems right now, and mostly because of the long scale defunding of higher education in the state, but then the deep budget cuts under Corbett, demographics. So there's challenges that are facing there, but there's a real opportunity here.
And also the state system is losing students to free public higher education in New York State.
Yeah, absolutely. Great point. See that some of the universities that are hurting the most, like in Mansfield and so on, right, which are close to the New York border. Exactly. Once New York says like, hey, we're going free public higher ed, right, for a good chunk of our population. There's less incentive to go across the border into Pennsylvania and to get, higher education at one of our universities. Absolutely. So, on the one hand, there is an opportunity to have new leadership in the state system of higher education. That's a good thing. But Cynthia Shapira, who's the chair of the Board of Governors, who was a Wolf appointee, now has it in her hands basically to right this ship. Right. And we'll see what happens here. We'll see what's moves forward. The Pittsburgh Post-Gazette had been reporting that. And this is actually a really good take, I thought. She was a higher education specialist down in, I want to say Penn or something like this. And she was pointing out the fact that by Brogan retiring now, he was the one who commissioned this report. And he would be the person to be positioned to implement it, right? To kind of build and carry it out. Now that he's bailing, the question is, what's going to happen with the results of this report, especially as we know that by December 1st, the Senate is actually pursuing its own investigation into PASHI, which in my mind is probably going to be much more politicized. So I still think that we're in for a very, very rough road ahead, but I'm not going to pretend for one second that I'm not happy that Brogan is hitting the pavement. And I have to say that, you know, a lot of those students that were out there last week protesting the increase in tuition on the backs of working class students in the state, they have got to also be pretty pleased with themselves to see that they were part of this effort, both in terms of with the faculty strike support, but also in their continued activism to, you know, keep the pressure on. I mean, it's the same message over and over again, right? Pressure is what works.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Crazy, man. So there you have it. I'm very psyched about that. We'll see where this happens going forward from here. And Sean, in kind of not too far down the road there, Jess King, who you've been kind of keeping your eye on for a while, she just launched her challenge to Smucker out there in the Lancaster area, right?
Yeah, she did. So the other night, I think I guess Tuesday night, she launched her campaign for Congress, and over 250 people showed up for it, which is pretty good.
That's pretty awesome.
Before a campaign kickoff. You know, Lancaster is one of the areas that's being heavily organized by Lancaster Stands Up, Lancaster Against Pipelines, Make the Road. You know, there's a convergence, there's a confluence of movements happening right now within the Lancaster area. And it seems like Jess King might be the real deal for the Democratic Party down there. It'll be interesting to see if the local party follows through and starts to support her.
Yeah, and I know it's a crowded field at this point, right, for the Democratic nomination.
Yeah, I think there's like four or five candidates that have already announced their candidacy. So it's getting crowded.
Yeah, well, you know, and she seems to be what I really like about, you know, I mean, what I know of her is stuff that I've read in part thanks to you following her so closely. She brings everything to the table that we've been talking about, right? I mean, she basically, you know, she's going to be on board to kind of a progressive agenda, and she adds in that other component, which, you know, we didn't mention earlier on, which absolutely needs to be part of the equation of any kind of Democratic Party platform or progressive platform going forward has to have, you know, taking seriously, you know, a crisis response to climate change, you know, and, you know, I could see her, I mean, since, you know, coming out of the Lancaster pipeline battles and that kind of stuff, I could see her actually, you know, pushing for that and be able to speak from experience, especially in our state. Like, you know, and again, you know, we've been talking about well for the longest time. You see Jerry Brown out there in California pushing really, really hard to actually meet the Paris Accord things, basically leading the charge on a climate summit coming up next year. You actually have New York and Washington signing on with California, basically making the commitment that we are going to honor the Paris agreements. You have 61 cities nationwide who've also signed on to the Paris agreement. And, you know, we got to sit there, you know, and then we've got in our own backyard, we've got Governor Tom Wolf, who's supposedly the progressive guy, right? Refuses. Well, I don't know if he refuses, but he's been virtually mum.
Cutting ribbons at coal mines that are opening up.
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, you know, here you've got, you know, the leaders in progressive healthcare, the leaders in progressive education, New York and California, right, and Washington kind of moving in this direction. And we have our own Democratic governor moving in the opposite direction, signing kind of like, you know, ribbon cutting ceremonies for coal plants. Right. And where, if anything, you know, Pennsylvania, I mean, we said this last week, too, as well. Pennsylvania is like, you know, at the forefront of the climate crisis, right? I mean, you know, we got to keep this stuff in the ground, and Wolf seems to be going the opposite direction. You know, I think that this is, it's about time that people start putting real pressure on that guy to get on board with the climate accord.
Yeah. So Pennsylvania accounts for 21% of the world's CO2 emissions. You know, it counts for 1% of the world's CO2 emissions. Imagine that. Like this state, this little dot on the map, you know, on the globe pretty much accounts for 1% of the world's CO2 emissions. And, you know, by 2100, our study came out, if we do nothing about climate change, Pennsylvania will have the climate at like Texas.
Like Texas. That sounds very comforting, Sean.
You know, and it's like, it's not like by 2100, it's going to be gradual. That's like, I'll be feeling those effects within my lifetime.
That's right.
Like within your kid's lifetime, we'll be feeling those effects. Like,
that's right.
And here we have a governor who is treading lightly on between energy jobs, you know, fracking, the environment, and really not saying too much about the Paris courts.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, all the more reason that we need, like, again, this is the big, bold step forward. I mean, where we're at. I mean, it's time to leapfrog, you know, fossil fuels at this point too, as well.
And this is another example of Democrats, like, just shitting on their base, pretty much.
Yep. Like, yep. And I am totally 100%, you know, like, I understand the jobs thing, right? And, you know, again, I spent a lot of time in coal country, right? And in the kind of the fracking areas and things like this. And you don't have a lot of jobs. And you have, like, you know, an opioid crisis that is running rampant through communities. You don't have that kind of economic base. The only thing that is going to change that, it's not going to be a doubling down on the very things that have helped destroy those communities long term.
The thing about the jobs, I would like to call BS on, you know, if you probably like look at the license plates of some of these companies that are laying out the pipelines, you can guess what states they're from. And it ain't Pennsylvania.
I'm telling you, you see a lot of Texas license plates and Oklahoma license plates once you get past I-80 in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. So, I mean, the jobs thing is also a myth.
No, it's a myth. And, you know, again, the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center has done great work on this. They show that on the one hand, yes, it's true that there is a short-term uptick of jobs. And if you preserve those jobs, then you'd have to have a provision that ensure that they went to Pennsylvanians if it was about creating those jobs. But the long-term jobs are virtually nothing, right? I mean, you're talking about a handful, literally a handful of long-term jobs here. So, yeah, you get a construction project, right? But then that goes away. And you're left back in the same situation. The only way that you can really combat this is to kind of invest heavily in an alternative infrastructure, right? Alternative energy infrastructure, and to prioritize, like, say, solar and wind and plants and things like this, prioritize putting them in areas that have been devastated by fossil fuels, right? To actually make that as part of the agenda of moving forward, because otherwise, not only are you going to devastate these communities even further by going through more and more extreme forms of energy extraction, but you're actually not going to solve the problem. You make it worse for the entire planet. don't do it, you know. But you know, Wolf, once again, he seems to be in bed with the fossil fuel industry on this one. And again, all the more reason that we should be pressuring him to moving forward. But in good news, if we're going to be in 2100, if we're going to be more like Texas, at least in the meantime, we get to see Daryl Metcalf throwing meltdown. Another hissy fit. Yeah, another meltdown. Right. So what happened, Sean?
So last month, there was a state government meeting that was the call of the chair, which, on a side note, one of the things that the Republicans have been doing up here in Pennsylvania lately, instead of like posting the times for their committee hearings, a lot of the committee hearings have been at the call of the chair. So it's kind of like to keep people thrown off and thrown out of the meetings, like media and stuff like this. And it's been like an uptick, it's just something to look into, like an uptick of these meetings, but the time's not posted, but the call of the chair. So you literally have to be in the Capitol and you might get like a 10-minute notice. Hey, this committee meeting's happening now. Like, you have to rush to a room and stuff like that. Instead of like knowing where to be at 10 o'clock in the morning, be prepared. So one of these meetings, there was a call of the chair, and Metcalf called this committee meeting on a sanctuary committee, sanctuary city bill. And conveniently enough, this was a very controversial bill. And right before he took roll call, he pretty much said, if you don't vote for this bill, you're not a patriotic American, pretty much.
Yeah, Good old Darryl.
And so State Representative Brian Sims, I haven't read the whole entire story yet, but State Representative Brian Sims pretty much gets his like docket and just throws the docket like in his face. You see papers like floating everywhere. And supposedly Sims called him an ignorant racist bigot multiple times, like with on the House floor, passing him, telling his staffers that they work for a racist and a bigot, and pretty much like yeah, it pissed them off. I mean, like, you know what? People have their issues with Sims up there, but, you know, good on him for, like, calling him a bigot to his face.
Yeah, and calling it what it is. You know what I mean? I mean, this guy is...
Tell us something we don't know.
You know, if there's any question... No, I mean, exactly. If there's any question in anybody's mind that that Daryl Metcalf is not at the forefront of the kind of, like, you know, barely, you know, concealed remaining Confederate officers from the South, you know what I mean? I mean, this guy is horrendous. But, you know, call it what it is. But, of course, Metcalf is like, gets all upset about it. Poor little baby, right? Poor little snowflake.
So that happened.
Oh, good. You got to love that. Good old Daryl Metcalf. All right. Well, we're coming up to another break, folks. When we come back, we'll get into the last call with, yes, once again, some space news and some beer news. And we'll take it from there. Here's, you know, good looking out. All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be back right after this. Chickens Out the Coop podcast. It's last call, folks. And, you know, last call every week, we bring you beer news and space news, of course, and other things that we think are, you know, kind of fun to close out the day. So, Sean, I got some space news once again. It's not as interesting as the teleportation of a photon into orbit that you brought up last week. but I have to say, all week long, right, we've been on vacation this week, we've been talking about that, and I've been reading stuff out, just trying to wrap my head around how that is actually it's happening. And, you know, I've been reading about entanglement theory and how particles can get entangled and you can inject information in one and it automatically appears in another. And it's dissertation, something like this. It's been pretty crazy. So thank you for at least keeping my brain active all week long on that. What crazy. You remember last week, I think it was last week, maybe it was 2 weeks ago, we talked about, I think it was Dubai, right? About these robots, right? They're actually hiring basically RoboCops to patrol the streets.
Yeah, I remember that.
Well, this is this past week. I guess it was the end of last week or so. Elon Musk has actually come out basically and saying that the government needs to start regulating the development of AI, right? It's pretty fascinating stuff. And I was like saying, excuse me, artificial intelligence. He basically has come out and said that, hey, look, and this is Musk speaking. He says, quote, I have exposure to the very cutting edge AI, and I think people should be really concerned about it. Musk told attendees of the National Governors Association meeting on Saturday, July 15th. And quote, I keep sounding the alarm bell, but until people see robots going down the street killing people, they don't know how to react because it seems so ethereal. Right. And he basically saying that without going into all the absolute details of it, you know, he doesn't tell us all the specific things that he's seen. But he's basically saying AI is like at that level. And so I'm thinking about, oh, great. You've got the release of RoboCop on the one hand, right, patrolling the streets out in Dubai with an artificial intelligence that's capable of doing this stuff. And we're like one step away of bringing those two things together. So, you know, given the way that we perform to or we respond to other crises like climate change and things like this that we can't see in our world, I worry about this one, man.
So like, that was like a fun little tidbit. So it's like Terminator?
It is, man. I'm telling you. Like, you know, the AI is going to get...
What's the Will Smith movie?
The Will Smith movie. Oh. iRobot.
Okay, or like that.
Yeah. Yeah, like iRobot. Exactly. And I
best
see, you know,
case scenario, we're out on the iRobot. Worst case scenario, Terminator.
Well, I don't know. There's even worst case scenarios than that, but it's like, no, but seriously, like, yeah, the iRobot stuff where you have the central AI taking over and things. And you look at the unprecedented consolidation of wealth that we've seen, especially within these high tech companies. And now, you know, at one time we had all this sci tech research that was going on was part of public university systems, right? That used to belong to all of us. Yes, there's always been like secret government research and things like this and corporate research and that kind of stuff. But we have never seen this kind of consolidation of wealth in the history of this planet. And a lot of that is consolidated around these high tech firms that are working on AI. I mean, there's been these articles that have been coming out, Microsoft and IBM, Google, they've all been experimenting with their own versions of AI. IBM has really been at the forefront of some of it, which is interesting because IBM is, they basically sold off their computer division to the Chinese. Now it's Lenovo. And now they've been working on this, this AI system. So this is stuff that we're going to see on the edge of it. And again, it's going to be in the hands of, the corporate chieftains of our world. So nice. That's pretty nuts. Yeah, it always makes me happy.
It makes you sleep easier at night.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what does make me happy though, and this is what my kids will really appreciate this, is Google just announced this week too as well, speaking of a corporate Leviathan, that Google Street View is now going to extend to the International Space Station. So you're going to be able to kind of do a full walk through the International Space Station through Google Street View, which is...
Will you be able to see if the Earth is round or not?
Sean, you know it's flat. Now just stop it.
So like I actually joined a flat earth group on Facebook a couple weeks ago, just to like see, and it is so over the top between like trolls really? And people who are serious, you can't tell if someone's like faking it or not.
Oh, so please do tell, like what are some of the discussions, the heated discussions that take place?
So I've like popped in. Someone posed the question: well, if the South Pole and the North Pole can get 6 months of light and 6 months of darkness, how's the Earth flat? Like questions like that are posed, and like you just see people like posting the most insane shit possible.
What does that even mean?
I have no clue. I have to dig deeper into this.
Yes, please go deep, Sean. Go deep into the flat earth people. But do they actually attempt like to make, pseudoscientific arguments, or is it just like, I don't believe?
No, they attempt to make like pseudoscientific arguments, but it's like so over the top trolling. You can't tell if it's pose law pretty much. Like you can't tell, it's so over the top. You can't see if like they're serious or not. Mm-hmm. Because it could be misconstrued that they are serious when they're not.
Oh, man. That's crazy. Crazy, crazy. Well, what can you do? So I guess that they're not going to be all that happy to hear the news from NASA this week, which is that NASA is actually releasing, I think it's like hundreds of hours or hundreds of sort of archival films to YouTube this week. They've started uploading already. And these are, according to Digital Trends in their articles, that... these were films that recovered from the archives of NASA's Armstrong Flight Research Center in Edwards, California. And the footage covers decades of pivotal research and developments undertaken by the agency and Air Force. Among the short clips is footage of the space shuttle landing research, test in the lunar landing research vehicle, and flights of the first supersonic aircraft, according to Motherboard. So it's fascinating. I'm thinking like this is one of the benefits of an agency that is actually a publicly owned government agency, as opposed to the move that we're seeing now into private spaceflight, is that, this is, NASA makes a decision. Hey, look, we found all this stuff. We should release this stuff to the public, I think that's pretty cool. So I'm going to be spending probably an unhealthy amount of time on YouTube watching some of these archival footage. But, I'm sure I'm going to see that the Earth is indeed round, despite what you might find there. Sean, you should actually post some of the videos to that Facebook group just to get a rise out of people and to see what the response is.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be great.
Oh man. So that's it for space news this week. We do have some cool beer news for the week. I understand that it is Shark Week out there in Harrisburg.
Yes. So before I want to get into this, you're staying down in the Crest, right?
I am indeed.
I thought you would stay with more of the common folk and stay in North Wildwood, but you chose to stay in the Crest.
I did say it, say in the yes, where the beaches are free and families are fun. Yes, that's where I am. I'm not in the crest. I don't like, look, you go to North Wildwood, I'll tell you, here's the problem. Here's the problem with North Wildwood, right? I don't like being around a ton of people like all the time. I'd lose my mind, right? And so, yeah, so I would keep my keep it working class credentials, but then I'd be in jail. Couldn't stand it. Yes, I am down the crest. Sorry.
Okay, just getting that outside. It is Shark Week this week with Discovery Channel. And Pizza Boy, as of Sunday morning at 11 a.m., they will be releasing their Armor Shark IPA in celebration of Shark Week.
Very cool. And what is it?
It's a 10% IPA, and it is freaking phenomenal.
Oh, you've had it?
Yes. I think it's like the third or fourth time they've brewed it since I've been there. So yeah, I've had it, and it's
awesome. Awesome. So that gets released when again?
This Sunday at 11 a.m.
That's awesome. I paid a visit out to 7 Mile Brewery the other day. That's kind of, if you go straight back from Wildwood, Wildwood Crest up the Rio Grande Highway there, there in Wildwood, and 7 Mile Brewery, and I picked up a couple 6-packs from them, just kind of check out some local stuff. They had a really nice, it was like a vice with, I want to say it was cucumber vice or something like this, really just refreshing. Didn't completely knock my socks off, but I tell you, they definitely had a knack for brewing some really good kind of beach beer, which was cool. You know, just kind of just easy drinking, sessionable stuff. So kudos to them. And then also had a Cape May IPA yesterday, which was kind of really, it was interesting because it wasn't as hoppy as I expected. It had almost like a lager taste to it, which was unexpected, much darker than other IPAs that I've been used to and so on. But it was good, you know, it's good to kind of hang out there and have a few there. That was pretty cool. But the good news I have last week, right after we actually got done recording last week, I had to run. I had to go, like, you know, return like a screen door to, you know, Lowe's or whatever, and run around. And I just happened to check my Facebook page before I was leaving. I saw an announcement that came up that Free Will was having this special can release of its Cloudy 2. They were releasing cans, 4-packs, and it was a collaboration with Levante Brewing. And I was like, I looked at it. I'm like, oh my God, that's today. I thought that was tomorrow. And it said, yes, we're going to start releasing them right at 12 or 1 o'clock or something like this. So I was like, look at the time. We just got done with our podcast stuff, and I got to go run my errands. I'm going to go pick some up on the way out. And I did, and they had a case limit. And I bought a case, right? I had to stand in line for it, and it was gone like almost immediately, like by the end of the day, I believe. But I've got some waiting for you, sir. So
I can't wait. Your beer snobbishness is now growing too. You're standing in line for beer.
I am. I've never done it before, you know? So I'm like, oh, this is cool. And I'm, you know, look, I live in Perkasie, and that's, you know, and Free Will is in Perkasie. I'm a big fan of supporting kind of super local stuff. And so I thought this was a great, great way to do it. I've never been there for a can release anywhere before. So
I know that it's right here. It's a really good IPA. How do you like it?
Oh, it was great, man. It was really good. It was like refreshing. It was, yeah, I mean, it was good all the way around. It had a nice bite to it. It was definitely a good can release for the summer too, as well, because it had that, you know, summer freshness to it. So, I think you'll like it. So I was very, very pleased. I've only had a couple of them, so I'm just, you know, stashing them away for now, but I got to drink them soon and find people to share them with, you know, cause I have no friends. I'll go to my neighbors like, hey, you want one of these? Oh, fun. Well, cool. So any other news for the good of the order, Sean?
No, nothing's really happening. I can't really think of anything else.
Crazy. All right. So just as some programming stuff, everybody, we will be back next week and normal kind of location and all that. see what's kind of happening there. Then Sean is going to be taken off a bit. So I've been bouncing around on vacation. Sean is going to be off traveling the grand old West Coast. And so we might, depending on how things go, I might bring in a guest, might do a guest host, or I might be doing some shorter versions just on my, just myself. And I know that will frustrate the hell out of a lot of people who listen to this, who have to listen to me drone on about like intricates of policy and budget stuff, stuff that makes Sean yawn. So, but anyways, so we'll be back here next week. Thank you all for once again for tuning in. Sean, I guess I'll see you this week coming up, right?
Yeah, I'll be around this week. My brother's getting married next Saturday, and we're looking to have a fun time.
Well, you know, I'll have some cans waiting for you that you can add to the mix.
Nice.
All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll talk to you all next week, and in the meantime, see ya.